Welcome to The Atypical Leader with Rick Brennan, where we talk about harnessing what makes you unique
and maybe even a little odd,
while at the same time dismantling the notion that you have to be a certain type of person or act a certain way to be an effective leader.
Definitely a leader, not a follower.
I like the sound of this.
It's time for us atypical leaders to come out of the shadows and learn to be proud and confident in what makes us different.
I'm proud of who I am.
I'm proud of who I am.
Atypical Leader starts now.
Hey, Gord.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, hallelujah. Hallelujah. Yeah, of course, you know, it was the usual stuff. I didn't have the mic turned on.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of my world, you know. And listen, really apologize about the confusion with the time. Again, probably me. That getting it right, that time change, is it 1:30, 2:30, or 3:30? Getting that shit wrong.
Yeah, Lisa figured that's what it was when she said, I had no idea there's a time difference. But anyway, she figured that's what it was. So yeah. All good.
Yeah, good. So we apologize again.
Connected to your brother-in-law, John, who lives downstairs here in our condo complex here in Hako.
So I guess like you're like the neighbor or you're right there or something like real close.
Yeah,
to John's?
Yeah, exactly. I'm in one of the condos right almost next door type thing.
Neat.
So we really do appreciate you coming on the podcast. And I don't know if you're aware what our podcast is about, but let me give you a quick little snapshot of that. You know, we're dealing with leadership, but we're dealing with leadership from a neurodiverse point of view. Some of the people who have dyslexia or ADHD or different cognitive issues, autism, but high functioning. So everybody we're talking about is mid to high functioning. And we're trying to work with those people to sort of own who you are, own that uniqueness in yourself, because I've been dealing with a lot of that stuff for a lifetime. And kind of the story is, you know, if I could overcome all the shit that I had, trust me, most people out there can. But most of the times we get convinced that we have to conform to the way, you know, certain groups of society work and so on and so forth. Really eliminate the skills that you have. So that's how we deal with this. And as I was talking to John and explaining what we do, he thought you'd be great because obviously in your world, you've dealt with all kinds of leaders. I'm sure from every color, shape, and size, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I would just in many different ways. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let me give our listeners a little introduction to who you are in case they don't know. I mean, I think you're pretty well known in Canada. You're the former GM of the Toronto Maple Leaf back in the Harold Ballard days when I was living in Montreal during those days as a kid. And I remember then, well, Montreal was my team. And of course, you know, Toronto was sort of the enemy at the time. But you were the youngest GM in the history of the NHL.
I was. It was kind of a very neat, fortunate, unexpected path that I had, you know, getting involved with the Maple Leafs. First, I started high school when I was just working part-time. And then when I was going to university, my break was that a neighbor was the public relations director, a guy named Stan Obodiak. So I got in initially, and then it sounds strange because I could type back in an era where not many guys typed, and it was pretty well a man's world as far as front offices went, that was a portable skill that got me in doing press notes and what have you. So anyway, later on, going like 10 years later, at the age of 30, I was, the youngest general manager in NHL history for about 18 months. And then I actually left 18 months later on my own volition and worked for the New York Rangers for 2 years as assistant general manager. So, and then been on the media side ever since.
Right. So you do, is it a radio show or whatever on Sirius XM?
I do. I do a few things now. My biggest radio stuff was I had a show for 17 years on the Fan, 11 years in the afternoons and then 6 in the morning on the Fan, which is an all sports station in Montreal. And we would talk to, in Toronto, we would talk to some of your guys in Montreal, like Mitch Melnick and different guys like that from time to time. So that was sort of my big time. And now I'm still being relevant. It's a little bit different. The business industry's changed quite a bit. So I'm co-host of a morning show on Sirius XM, NHL Network Radio Channel 91. I still do some work on the Fan. co-author never really got to realize how great they could have been because they were torn apart after they lost to your dominant and beloved Montreal Canadiens two consecutive years in 1978.
Go ahead.
1979.
And is that the book called Their Sensational Victory and the End of an Empire? Is that the one we're talking about?
Well, actually, that one's about the 67 team. So that's about the 1967 team. I did that 19 years ago.
Okay.
About that one. So that was the one that actually did win the Stanley Cup. And the revival is the one about 11, 12 years later, about, you know, Daryl Sittler and Boris Salming and Tiger Williams and Lanny McDonald and those guys,
right,
who had a great playoff series win against the New York Islanders, kind of resemble this current Leaf team, you know, with Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley, and those guys that are, and Willie Nylander, that are all developed from within and haven't had the playoff success yet. And hopefully they can win a big playoff series, but there's some similarities all those decades later. So been involved in a few books. That one's the latest one about that late 1970s team.
Right, right. Very cool. So do I dare ask what you think how this team will do this year?
Well, yeah. I mean, I talk about it all the time. So everyone asks about it all the time. I'm fortunate that, you know, I'm very fortunate I have a job that people, first of all, you get positive reinforcement about, because a lot of people don't, like you do go about, do your job and, you know, whatever. And I'll get people that say, geez, really like hearing you, listening to you. And that's really nice. I mean, that's gratifying and it's something the average person doesn't get. So I'm fortunate that way. And they always want to talk about everyone. If you're a sports fan, then you're the general manager of whatever team you're a fan of. And you're trying to think about what's best for the team, how they're going to do. And so this Leaf team, I don't think overall they're as good as the team 2 or 3 years ago, as deep, but still that doesn't make, you know, matter in the playoffs. I still think that what's eluded them, it could happen this year. It very well could, but we won't know until the playoffs begin. And you know, by and large, it's just been disappointing when it's come to the playoffs the last 4 or 5 years. So hopefully that changes.
Yeah, I hope that. Actually, I'm not a Leafs fan. I can say that, although I lived in Toronto a number of years and I went to many games and loved watching them play. But I can't help but want them to do well. You know, I mean, they've got such raw talent, and it would be great if they really be great for Canada if they did well.
Well, you know, I think a lot of us now, you know, Rick, are you know, we used to have a rivalry. So the Toronto-Montreal rivalry was a bitter rivalry. Calgary-Edmonton's a bitter rivalry. But no Canadian-based NHL team has won a Stanley Cup since 1993. So I think in a lot of ways you cheer for your own team, but you're actually cheering if your own team doesn't win, you know, that there's 7 teams from Canada. For God's sake, could one of them just win the Stanley Cup after this incredibly, 30-year or so drought? So for Canadian teams in general. So you're right about, I think if it's Edmonton or Vancouver, who are really good this year, you know, if they're the ones that win, that would be great for Canada as well. But it's always whatever team you're partial to, that's the team that's really special.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So getting to sort of what we want to talk about on this podcast is a leadership. And it's sort of that atypical leadership, you know, leadership that's a little different from the norm, and how that can be a successful or even more successful than your typical type of leader. Now, I'm sure that you've had, and you got to tell a story about Harold Ballard, please. But I was hoping that you could give us an examples of different types of leadership, how effective you think they were and why, and how maybe that kind of relates back what we talk about, how different types of leaderships can be as effective or more effective than, you know, your status quo type thing.
Well, before I talk about Harold Ballard and others in the front office, because there are, you know, a few there, the one is obviously when you're talking about, you know, we just had the Super Bowl on as well, that when you're talking about within a dressing room, the different kind of leaders that are, you know, even when you're playing a pickup sport on a team, you know, you kind of know certain individuals, just even like a house league type thing, that are more the leader types and others aren't. And so, you know, you saw so many different kinds of leaders there that, you know, some are very vocal, demonstrative, in your face. Some are more the quiet leaders. Like I'd put Bob Gainey with the Montreal Canadiens, sure, you know, kind of like that. We had Boris Salming, who was just a leader by his presence and what he did. Wendell Clark was like that, kind of on the quieter side. Matt Sundin as well. It's funny, the Leafs have had a lot of those quieter ones, where Doug Gilmour was kind of the more demonstrative, get pissed off all the time, whatever, just, you know, that tile. So, and again, the one thing within the dressing room I taught that's kind of different than an average organization. So there's no boss. I mean, there's a captain, whatever, who may fake they're the leader, who talks too much and you want them to shut up, whose words are, you know, measured greatly. And when I did the book on the 1967 team that won the Stanley Cup, everyone talked about the great captain, George Armstrong, that, you know, just the reverence they had for him. The business side, the most underrated general manager ever, I'm biased too, because he kind of championed me in that, but was a guy named Jim Gregory, who worked under Ballard a couple of years before me. And he just had a great style about one was he always said, if you're trying to act like the boss all the time, you're never the boss,
right?
You know, and it was just a great way that he had a very personable way about him, but we respected the hell out of him. And also, like, if always really admired that style about, you know, the way he got things done. You know, he just would get the most out of people, motivate them, champion them, a real, real positive way about that. As far as being the leader, he got replaced by a guy named Punch Imlach.
Yeah,
the second time around. Punch Imlach was actually the coach and general manager when they won those four Stanley Cups in the 60s. But he came in and he was a disaster. Like, that's why that book's written about. He got rid of Lanny McDonald and made a lot of trades that way. And all of a sudden just decided this is all BS here, you know, whatever. You're not as good as you think you are. And I think we can find one thing about leaders or anybody. There's always this thing, tear it down, blow it up, get rid of it. Well, that's always easy to say, but it's the other part that's tough about, you know, rebuilding it, building an organization, building a, you know, positive work environment, building a positive business and that. So I got to see a contrast there, even though he was extremely good to me the brief time he was there. I got only good things to say, but I do certainly understand. I saw the difference between Jim Gregory and how he operated and then Punch Imlach the second time around.
But what was the inherent difference between the two?
Well, Punch just came in with attitude. I'm the boss and shut up, listen to me. And he was also at that point a little bit outdated. You know, I realize now being in my 60s, he was in his 60s then, that you put off and make an assumption that you're still on top of your game and on top of everything, but you're not. You may not put the same hours in, and things have changed a bit. And rather than you adapting with it, you're saying, screw the change. This is the way it's going to be. And he kind of did the whole my way or the highway. And the Leafs just went tumbling out of the playoffs once again, where, like I said, Jimmy Gregory was just the guy on top of everything and the motivational guy, the collaborative guy, let's get things done, the efficient guy. So it was interesting having those two contrasts. And then, you know, Rick, you mentioned about Harold Ballard, and he was the guy, like, again, he was good to me in many ways, but I also understood, like, he was the boss. Like, he was the boss. And yeah, that was important. You know, his line, I write the checks, you know, and again, kind of the antithesis of what Jimmy Gregory said, that if you're always trying to show you're the boss, you're never the boss. Well, he was the boss. And one of the, you know, one of the negatives was that I want to know everything going on. But meanwhile, that was a problem, because if you got his ear, you could put a wrench in somebody else. Like, you know, I had a waiter from the hot stove lounge, like talking hockey. And then Ballard would say to me something about, geez, we're paying that Rob Ramage guy too much. And I go, holy crap, he's talked to Tommy again in the hot stove. Like, whatever. They could, you know, everyone could stir up crap with him in that kind of style of being a boss.
Right. It sounds like humility. The absence of humility is not a great trait for a good leader.
I'm the oldest of four. The third of four, Craig, is autistic. He's in his 50s now. Okay. And he's probably the classic case in that he was born in 1964, back when the diagnosis was really new, and he appeared to be developing normally till about age two, which quite often happens. And then something happens that shouldn't, or something doesn't happen that should. And all of a sudden he started, you know, losing his speech and just a lot of things. And then we got the diagnosis that he was autistic. We really, you know, didn't know what it meant or whatever. And most people didn't know, even though now so many are on the spectrum, right? So point being, later on, I worked at a summer camp helping, because they needed male staff quite a bit. And I really found that enjoyable. And I found it easy, because when you have a sibling 24/7, you know, you're very well versed in that. And I ended up being the director of the camp for 3 years. It was just a day camp for 6 weeks But I really, it gave me great leadership skills that I took from Jimmy Gregory, because I was working part time with the Leafs, and the way Jim Gregory, I made it a very positive environment, that the staff were motivated, that they were, if they're having fun, there's a better chance that the kids are having fun. Because for someone, people with autism, that's a big thing to have some kind of fun, right? Because a lot of them are in their own little worlds and things like that. So I took a lot applied from Jim Gregory. To your point about on the podcast, a lot of the ideals can be applied anywhere. So it's a people business. It's a people world. It's, even though now we're doing this on computers and that, it still comes down to how you handle people and those relationships.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's very interesting that you spent that time at the day camp like that. Very cool.
Yeah, no, it was. It was, and at one point, I was the director. My brother Bob was the assistant director. My brother Craig went to it, and our sister Karen was a junior counselor. So my mom couldn't be any happier than that. It was at a place called Sunnybrook Park in Toronto. So it was like just a area, big park area, and that. And we used the what was then called the Ontario Crippled Children's Center pool, and now the Hugh McMillan Center, to go swim and all that kind of stuff. And it was really a great grounding job for me, because this one, people are impressed about talking sports. So if you're doing sports and you're a sports fan, where, as you know, kids with autism, they don't get impressed. Okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
it's like, so it's it was more work and more challenging to kind of, get them liking what was doing and motivated and enjoying the, trying to make it like a real camp experience.
Well, that's interesting. You talk about Jim Gregory, you talk about this camp, and you're really learning sensitivity, humility, but all those things I think that almost don't go with that vision of a coach or a general manager, kind of how they're tough and they, hard-nosed and all that. And you're almost describing something different than that.
Well, yeah. No, exactly. But there was, other people that there was a guy that was director of the camp another year I wasn't, and it didn't go so well because he kind of was a know-it-all psychologist or whatever. And quite frankly, he would have had more knowledge than, say, that I did in my day, but just didn't grasp the part about, it's fine. You think you have all the knowledge. Again, it's just like leading your staff in the right way. And, they didn't really like working for them. So I know what you're saying. And it is funny nowadays that kind of fire and brimstone and yelling. And I mean, you look at Mike Babcock, geez, like he didn't even get started with the Columbus Blue Jackets this time. The players had enough power to say that they felt uncomfortable with him coming in new as a coach in Columbus and, some of the things he was asking of them. I mean, that it's time, you got to change with the times. Regular workplaces, you can't yell at anybody anymore. I like that. My manager at Dominion Food Store was drunk all the time and he'd yell at everybody and he got away with it, right? And that, that was kind of the old school. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, times are changing, that's for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Can I ask you something, Gord? What attributes did you take from the camp, learning what you learned at the camp, and put it into your professional life?
One thing always is thinking on your feet, which, so you're just sort of being ready and adaptable and try to, think through solutions. Also, just to expect anything, because you can never know what could happen and whatever. And just so, I think that was really a positive. I think for me, I got a lot of confidence. It gave me a lot of self-confidence. I never really knew if I'd be a leader working and clicking. I think I molded, I probably was a little, because I was green, maybe a little bit too soft in some cases initially, but then I learned the whole thing about whether it's not, whether it's having to let someone go or whatever it may be, you got used to doing that part. And that also is a part of it about being a good boss because if someone's not holding up their weight, and I'm talking to a significant degree, I mean, you're doing a disservice to everybody else if you're tolerating that. Definitely. And so I learned to get some edge and be not tough, but just make tough decisions. It wasn't my nature to have to deliver bad news.
Yeah, I think it's all about being in balance for sure. I mean, you know, you want to be sensitive, you want to listen to people, but at the end of the day, the job's got to be done. We have to move the thing forward. And I really like what you said. It's about the team. And so often when it comes to those tough decisions where there are 40 people that are suffering unless you make that decision, who are not getting, you know, aren't living in the right environment unless you make those tough decisions. So it's all about balance. And I love what you talked about too, about that psychologist who was at the camp, and they come with their theories and stuff like that. And that's one thing we really deal with on this podcast, really based on my experience. It's all about the application of this stuff. I don't need, even if, because we, the whole point of atypical is undiagnosed neurodiverse people. Because it's one thing to be diagnosed, and I think then you're given a certain level of leeway. It's another thing to be undiagnosed, and it's worth finding out through this podcast, wow, there's a ton of us.
Yeah.
You know, that we have dyslexia, we have ADHD, but we don't have a diagnosis. And that quirkiness sometimes, it leads us down a path of how we live our life. For me, for example, and I, with all the shit I had, I learned to bob and weave. I learned to delegate. I learned to work with people. And it was that application of those things that really allowed me to be successful. It wasn't that knowledge coming out of a book.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned a big word, delegate. And that's something initially probably I did too much myself. Then you learn to delegate because, you know, you want to surround yourself with good people. Mentioning about, and that's how you grow, by learning those types of things and adapting. I know probably one of the more respected coaches is Paul Maurice, who now is with the Florida Panthers. He was with the Winnipeg Jets before. And when things came up, like, you know, Bill Peters had to resign coaching Carolina because a player had brought up about some racist incident or racial talk from years earlier. And then, you know, other things had come up, and we saw the Chicago Blackhawks win 3 Stanley Cups, and then their general manager, Stan Bowman, and their head coach, Joel Quenneville, had to resign as well because there was a accountability thing about a guy on their staff and, you know, some inappropriateness that, that, you know, wasn't addressed properly. And Paul Maurice just said, like all of us and whatever we're doing, you know, a coach now, they've had to grow with the times. Like if you're an NHL coach and you don't grow with the times, more so than, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, where you could just decide you're the time and you're going to do it. That's just a big part for all of us. But it also includes in professional sports, because there's really no sacred cows anymore about, you know, if there's stuff that's inappropriate that years ago could be just, oh, guys will be guys or whatever you want to call it. Or no, it's not. And you better grow and you better evolve.
Yeah, you got it. You certainly have to do that.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely. There's been a lot of that.
Wow, great conversation, guys. I think that what we'll do, though, is we'll cut it off here. We'll get back to talking to Gort on next week's episode, and we'll continue our conversation on sports and leadership. So see you then. Thanks for joining us today and listening to another episode of The Atypical Leader. If you haven't already done so, like, share, and follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. By liking and sharing, you will help other atypicals find all of us, so we can all start to leverage the stories, strategies, and strengths of what make us all unique. Keep listening and remember, take charge and push away those self-doubts. Leverage what we're talking about. Be confident in who you are and proud of what makes you unique. So join me, Rick Brennan, and my co-host, Judy Sims, on the next episode of The Atypical Leader. And don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Atypical Leader, Harnessing the Power of Neurodiversity, on Amazon. To learn more about us, leadership, and neurodiversity, please go to our website, atypicalleader.com.
Thanks for listening. Let's do it again next week.